Well, the probe was not the only part of the mission. There is the orbiting spacecraft, which is now in orbit around Jupiter, a new moon of Jupiter, if you like. It's designed to study, among other things, the natural moons of Jupiter, of which there are four big ones: Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. Io and Europa are about the size of our moon. Ganymede and Callisto are the size of the planet Mercury. They're planet-sized bodies, but unlike Mercury, both of these are half water ice. Planet-sized bodies made of half water ice. When Voyager flew by in 1979, it really revealed how diverse these worlds are. But Voyager, because it was flying by, could not get very close. And so our best view is what I'll be showing you, and then I'll tell you how much better Galileo is going to do. Here is the orbit. We're now in this first orbit, and just a few weeks ago we fired the main engine one last time to raise the orbit so that we would not ever get as close again as we did the first time. The radiation environment, that is the particles trapped in Jupiter's magnetic field, are so intense that if we were to stay in here, the spacecraft would be damaged by the radiation within a very short time. So we're now out where it's safer. We think the spacecraft can probably last a couple of years at least before the radiation damages it. So we're now out, and our first encounter with the moon is Ganymede on July 27th of this year. And that will be followed by a whole series of orbits. We are basically playing Jovian billiards. We're using the moons themselves to slingshot us in such a way that we will come back in orbit, fly by another moon. So in June, we go by Ganymede. We pass by Ganymede again in September. Then we go past Callisto. In December, we have our first flyby of Europa. And you can see that each of these flybys is designed by navigating the spacecraft very carefully and using the moons themselves to sort of change the direction so that we can then have another encounter with another moon. Very elaborate navigation that's required to do that, but it means that we can do all this without any fuel to speak of. It's all using the natural velocities that nature has provided us in the orbital motion of the moons. What about Ganymede, the first one we're going to encounter in June? And the data will start coming back here in Australia over Parkes and Tidbinbilla in July. This is Ganymede. It's as big as the planet Mercury, but we're looking at a water ice surface. Notice that it seems to have two kinds of surface: old, darker material, which we now believe, because we can see how many impact craters there are, to be old, 4.5 billion years old, and about half the surface, which is somewhat lighter in color. And when we look at it more carefully, here's the darker stuff. You can see that this is an icy surface where the impact has been has excavated white snow out onto the surface. But notice that this lighter material is ridged or grooved. Here is a much better image showing you how grooved this is. The smallest thing you can see in this image is about 3 kilometers across. So these grooves are typically tens of kilometers in spacing. There was some earthquake-like effect that occurred in the first 500 million years of Ganymede's lifetime, which replaced half of its surface with this grooved terrain. When Voyager flew by, we flew by at a distance of about 150,000 kilometers and could see this. When Galileo flies by, it will fly by at a distance of a few hundred kilometers and will see things 100 or more times resolution that we can see here. And I cannot tell you what we're going to see, because nobody has ever seen this kind of surface before where you can see things tens of meters across. Then there's Callisto. It's a twin of Ganymede, same size, same composition, half water ice, same age, because these are all formed at the same time, yet its surface looks distinctly different. It has an ancient surface. It has none of the younger surface on it. All you see are a huge number of impact craters. There's one where, if you look carefully, you'll see a series of concentric rings on this particular image. I don't know if I can make it any better or not. I think you can see a series of concentric. This is a very large residual impact crater of some sort, but it's just covered with craters, one crater upon the other. Again, we'll fly 100 times closer, a few hundred kilometers above this surface, and can look at this ancient surface. This is what we expected the moons in the outer solar system to look like. Heavily cratered ancient surface. It turns out Ganymede doesn't look that way, and certainly Europa does not look that way. Europa is much closer to Jupiter. We would expect it to even be more bombarded by impacts because Jupiter kind of pulls all the colliding material in. But there aren't any impact craters on Europa. This is an ice-covered body. The streaks you see, if you looked at it by eye, you would almost wouldn't see them. It would look snow white. We stretched it a bit to see even the faintest color differences. This is the highest resolution image we have. So again, one can see things a few kilometers across in this image. There are no mountains, no valleys. This is the smoothest surface we have found in the solar system. The highest things on the surface are these white-like streaks. You can see some of them over here. They're perhaps a few hundred meters high. Now, and no, essentially no impact craters. What that means is this surface is very young geologically. It's not an ancient surface. It's been replaced, recovered. There's been fresh snow put down on Europa since it formed within the last hundreds of million, 100 million years or even 10 million years. We don't know. How is that possible? One suggestion is that we're looking at ice pack on a liquid water ocean, that this is not a frozen ice crust covering a rocky body, but there is underneath it an ocean, and the reason this is so smooth is because it's ice pack on an ocean. That is a very exciting possibility, if true, because we know how important the oceans were to the origin of evolution of life here on Earth. And if there is the possibility that there is another ocean extant in the solar system, the opportunity to explore that ocean in the future has got to be a very, very important opportunity. We will want to go back, not just past Europa, but down onto Europa, perhaps seismically determine what's inside of Europa, and eventually use hot water or something like that to drill a hole down into this ocean. Because we know here on Earth that life has evolved on the ocean floor around thermal vents without any sunlight whatsoever, just using the energy coming out from the interior of the Earth. Life is remarkably robust, and the possibility that this body might have a liquid water ocean is quite intriguing. Again, we'll be flying hundreds of kilometers from the surface rather than 100,000 kilometers from the surface.